and welcome to the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and this episode, brought to you in association with Janssen, will provide an overview of the Janssen-sponsored symposium entitled Dynamic Management of Crohn's Disease, Reaching a New Dimension in Patient Care, which took place on 13th of October 2020 during the United European Gastroenterology Week Virtual 2020. The symposium featured four distinguished experts in the field: Professor Silvio Danesi from the Humanitas Research Hospital in Milan, Italy; Professor Subrata Ghosh from the Institute of Immunology and Immunotherapy at the University of Birmingham; Professor Torsten Kuchatzik from Klinikum Lüneburg in Germany; and Professor Laurent Perrin-Biroulot from Nancy University Hospital at Vendôme-les-Nancy in France, doing my best to pronounce these properly. Together, they highlighted the latest developments in managing Crohn's disease with a focus on the groundbreaking Stardust treat-to-target trial and the intestinal ultrasound sub-study. The faculty emphasized that dynamic management of Crohn's is evolving towards an emphasis on proactive management, including patient-reported outcomes and endoscopic targets, with the goal of preventing disability and bowel damage. The data from the Stardust trial illustrated how a treat-to-target strategy could be an additional tool for clinicians to assist them in making informed treatment dosing decisions and help patients with Crohn's achieve their treatment goals. The results from the intestinal ultrasound sub-study showed how this technique could be a useful tool in non-invasive monitoring of treatment response in patients with Crohn's. The faculty concluded that in the current Crohn's disease treatment landscape, dynamic management strategies can be used to adapt to the patient's needs with the goal of providing long-term disease control. So let's drill down into some of the finer details, starting with Professor Laurent Perrin-Biroulet. In his presentation, it was revealed that early targeting in Crohn's offers a novel opportunity to change the disease course for long-term disease evolution, helping patients to lead a normal life by preventing disabilities. Using paradigms such as treat-to-target, incorporating composite endpoints such as clinical and endoscopic remission, and applying adjunctive measures such as biomarkers helps provide optimal disease monitoring and management for patients with inflammatory bowel disease. Data from the CALM study showed that complete endoscopic remission was achieved in only approximately 20% of patients treated with a tight control strategy at week 48, suggesting that this target might have been, well, too ambitious in the study. New strategies and therapies and new mechanisms of action may therefore be needed. Data shows that the early use of disease-modifying anti-inflammatory therapies can impact the natural history of Crohn's. In addition, novel initiatives in inflammatory bowel disease management were shown to promote an emphasis on disease modification to help achieve disease and symptom control, followed by disease remission for long-term disease modification. Defined endpoints can include, well, several measures focusing on patient quality of life and the prevention of disease complications. Recent studies have also shown that transmural healing is a better outcome compared with endoscopic healing, resulting in less surgery, fewer hospitalizations, and a positive impact on the disease course. Now, in the era of the STRIDE guidelines with tight control and treat-to-target strategies, clinicians are focusing on achievements of deep remission with an absence of symptoms and severe endoscopic lesions, with the ultimate goal of preventing disability and bowel damage in patients living with Crohn's. Let's also take a look at the research presented by Professor Silvio Danesi. The Stardust trial was discussed, which was the first treat-to-target randomized trial of adult patients with Crohn's using endoscopy at week 16 as a decision point for dose adjustment of ustekinumab. The objective was to test if a maintenance strategy with ustekinumab based on early endoscopy, regular assessment of biomarkers and clinical symptoms with subsequent treatment adjustment is more successful in obtaining endoscopic improvement than using standard of care with ustekinumab. The study also applied intestinal ultrasound to assess the response to treatment in a subgroup of patients. Patients with moderate to severe active Crohn's disease were included. An interim analysis was performed at week 16. If patients achieved the first target, the Crohn's Disease Activity Index or CDAI-70 response, they were randomized to the treat-to-target or standard-of-care arm. Patients in the treat-to-target arm either received ustekinumab every 8 or 12 weeks based on the change in the simple endoscopic score for Crohn's disease, the SES Crohn's, from baseline. Patients in the treat-to-target arm received possible dose adjustments based on symptoms and biomarkers, while patients in the standard-of-care arm received dose adjustments based solely on disease flare as confirmed by a physician. The primary endpoint at week 48 was a 50% reduction from the baseline Crohn's SES. CDAI, the Crohn's Disease Activity Index, C-reactive protein, and fecal calprotectin were assessed to examine whether patients had achieved the treatment target, a CDAI less than 220 and a greater than or equal to 70-point improvement from baseline, plus a CRP value of less than 10 milligrams per liter or fecal calprotectin value of less than or equal to 250 micrograms per gram. If patients had achieved the target, they could continue with the assigned dose. If the target was not reached, they were eligible for dose escalation. If patients did not achieve the target while receiving a dose every 4 weeks, they discontinued. Results showed that 490 patients received ustekinumab induction, with a large proportion of patients achieving CDAI response, 59.8%, and 63.8% in the treat-to-target and standard-of-care arms, respectively, of patients who received the 12-week dosing and were still receiving that dose at week 48. Similarly, 40.5% and 78.4% of patients receiving the 8-weekly doses in the treat-to-target and standard-of-care arms, respectively, were still receiving that dose at week 48. The primary endpoint, an improvement in SES Crohn's greater than 50% or equal to 50% at week 48, was achieved by 37.7% in the treat-to-target arm, compared with 29.9% in the standard-of-care arm, which is significant with a p-value of 0.09. The last observation carried forward, or LOCK-F, and non-responder imputation, or NRI, analyses, including only patients who discontinued due to reasons of lack or loss of efficacy, showed that a target proportion of patients in the treat-to-target arm achieved the primary endpoint versus the standard-of-care arm. The p-values were 0.049 and 0.036, respectively. The changes in the simple endoscopic score over time from baseline to week 48 showed a clear and rapid effect of ustekinumab at week 16 in the treat-to-target arm, 13.4 versus 8.8, a delta of 4.6, which was from minus 5.5 to minus 3.7. There was no significant difference in the score between the treat-to-target and standard-of-care arms at week 48. Over 70% of patients achieved the CDAI-70 target score change, and more than 60% of patients were in clinical remission at week 48 in both treat-to-target and standard-of-care groups. Mean CDAI scores also showed a dramatic drop between baseline and week 8 in both treatment arms. Normalization of biomarker responses at week 48 was observed in approximately 25% of patients for both arms. Changes in biomarkers over time showed a similar trend compared with the CDAI-70 data over time for both arms, with a marked drop between baseline and week 8. The safety summary at week 48 indicated that there were no major differences between the treat to target and standard of care groups, confirming the well-known safety profile of ustekinumab in patients with Crohn's. Professor Danese concluded by reiterating that in the Stardust study, 48 weeks of treatment with ustekinumab resulted in a numerically higher endoscopic response in patients in the treat-to-target arm compared with the standard-of-care arm, with high clinical remission and biomarker responses also observed in both arms. The safety and tolerability of ustekinumab was consistent with the known safety profile. Treat-to-target could, therefore, represent an additional tool for clinicians to guide ustekinumab dosing decisions for patients with Crohn's. Professor Torsten Kujatsik's presentation was entitled, Can We Reach the Stars with Ultrasound? An intestinal ultrasound can be used to determine disease activity and severity and to detect complications in patients with Crohn's. It's a non-invasive, low-cost, patient-centered technique compared to magnetic resonance imaging and computed tomography scanning. The aims of the Stardust intestinal ultrasound sub-study were to assess the effectiveness of ustekinumab in achieving intestinal ultrasound response and remission, and to explore the relationship between intestinal ultrasound response and changes in clinical and endoscopic parameters over time. Intestinal ultrasound can reflect transmural disease activity, and the most prominent parameter is bowel wall thickness, which was examined in the ileum and colon in Crohn's patients. Increased wall thickness was defined as increases greater than 2 millimeters in the terminal ileum and 3 millimeters in the colon, as determined in the transverse and longitudinal sections of the most affected part of the segment. An intestinal ultrasound defined response was defined as greater than or equal to 25% reduction in wall thickness compared to baseline. Vascularization using color Doppler signal, echo stratification, and inflammatory mesenteric fat assessments were also used to assess transmural disease activity. Intestinal ultrasound remission or transmural healing was defined as normalization of wall thickness, normal vascularization, normal bowel wall echo stratification, and the absence of inflammatory mesenteric fat based on the most affected part of the bowel. Intestinal ultrasound was performed at baseline, weeks 4, 8, 16, and 48. The baseline characteristics showed, unsurprisingly, that the ileum was the most affected part of the bowel in 65% of the 77 patients participating in the sub-study, and the colon, including the cecum, was the most affected part in 35%. The overall percent change in bowel wall thickness over time showed significant decreases compared with baseline values starting at week 4 of treatment, and the p-value was less than 0.01. and continuing at week 8, highly significant with a p-value of less than 0.0001. Week 16, same p-value, less than 0.0001. And week 48, well, also the same p-value, less than 0.0001. Pronounced decrease in bowel wall thickness was most prominent in the colon compared with the ileum, but both areas showed significant decreases over time. Analyses of intestinal ultrasound response and transmural healing over time showed that 25% of patients showed a response to treatment as early as week 4, with approximately 24% of patients showing complete transmural healing and complete normalization of all intestinal ultrasound parameters at week 48 of treatment. The intestinal ultrasound response was observed early at week 4 in both the colon and ileum, though the response was more pronounced in the colon. There was a progressive increase in the number of patients showing decrease in bowel wall thickness in both the ileum and colon over time. The proportion of patients with normalization of vascularization, bowel wall stratification, and mesenteric fat increased through to week 48 for the most affected part of the bowel. Results showed that there was a 92.3% agreement between intestinal ultrasound and endoscopy in defining the most affected part of the bowel, a baseline for the ileum, indicating that intestinal ultrasound may be a useful tool in addition to endoscopy to help determine the most affected part of the bowel. There was also a fair reliability between intestinal ultrasound response to the most affected part of the bowel at weeks 4, 8, 16, and 48, and the endoscopic response and biomarkers at week 48. Professor Kujarcik concluded by emphasizing that intestinal ustekinumab responses to ustekinumab were detected as early as week 4 of treatment and improved over time all the way up to week 48. Furthermore, a clinically meaningful percentage of patients achieved transmural healing at week 48, primarily in the colon. There was high agreement at baseline between intestinal ultrasound and endoscopy in defining the most affected part of the bowel, and reliability between intestinal ultrasound response as early as week 8 and endoscopic response and biomarker outcomes at week 48. The results showed that intestinal ultrasound can be a useful tool in predicting later endoscopic response with ustekinumab in patients with Crohn's, and underlined the potential benefits of using intestinal ultrasound as part of a personalized approach to treatment. Finally, a brief note on how Professor Ghosh from Birmingham demonstrated how the evolving principles of Crohn's management can be applied to current practices using a case-based approach. He presented the case of a 28-year-old male patient diagnosed with Crohn's characterized by ileocolonic disease. Professor Ghosh presented several possible treatment choices for the patient, including optimizing ustekinumab therapy or switching to a different class of drug. He highlighted that the initial rapid clinical and endoscopic responses to treatment during the induction phase benefit from intravenous infusion, while long-term control and reduction in disease burden or even normalization can be achieved over time by administering the correct maintenance dose of the drug at correct intervals, monitored appropriately by biomarkers, endoscopy, or ultrasound. And that concludes the overview of the Janssen-sponsored symposium entitled Dynamic Management of Crohn's Disease, Reaching New Dimension in Patient Care, from the United European Gastroenterology Week Virtual 2020. Some fascinating insights from a truly stellar team of experts. I do hope you extracted as much out of that as I did, and I look forward to seeing you again for another episode of the EMG Health Podcast. Thanks a lot.